Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week. It's Friday, July 24th. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here this morning with Will Love. Hi, Will.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
In for Chris Bessler.
Yeah. Who, hopefully I can do an admirable job and fill his shoes.
Yes.
Which are huge.
But, yes. Yeah. It's, right. Big shoes to fill, but yeah.
He's... Now, Jack, I got a question for you.
Ask away.
All right. So I came up with this idea. I'm going to build a big wooden horse, and we're going to get inside of it.
Uh-huh.
We don't know how long. Right?
Yeah.
But are you in?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm in. Can I be towards the top half of the horse and not towards the bottom half of the horse?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those guys look like they had a rough time.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. But
yeah. Did you see the film?
Going to watch it in IMAX on Sunday.
No, lucky you.
Yeah.
I went and saw it on Friday. I enjoyed it. We'll talk more about that perhaps later.
Yep.
Breaking also,
news.
Yeah, that's right. we're also joined by Zach Hagedorn, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Let's see. Yeah, there he is. There he is. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. I still work there, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I'm still on the masthead.
We should also say the often-quoted Zach Hagedorn.
Yes.
Yeah,
but... oft-quoted, nationally recognized.
Yep.
Okay, quick rundown of the headlines. There's lots to talk about today. It was kind of a busy week. And wide-ranging news. I'll start with a little good news. Idaho ranks third in wage growth in the country for the... Hold on, where is that? What was that period? In 2025, it rose by 4.7% from 2024. So more than the other states in the country. All but two, that is. In other state news, the Supreme Court ruled against this county, Bonner County, in a minor land division suit. That was regarding a property, or I guess two contiguous properties in the Priest Lake area. It ruled against Bonner County and local developers Tricor Investment LLC, bringing a close or... at least closing the book on this chapter for in a years-long case regarding, as Sansari Mitchell writes in the Reader, two contiguous minor land divisions outside of Kulin. As close listeners to this program and readers of the paper will know, the county no longer uses minor land divisions, but this suit predates the change of, I think, last October when they changed the zoning laws on that one. The ruling sets a precedent for legal review of additional land use decisions not explicitly outlined in Idaho's Local Land Use Planning Act. We can talk more about this if we have time, but this is a suit against the county, a finding against the county, as well as the developers, Tricor Investment LLC. How about local air quality news? Where is that? I had that open just a second ago. The current air quality in Sandpoint is unhealthy. 116 is the current AQI, according to AccuWeather. But the forecast is for actually that to improve throughout the day and then get worse again overnight. Although today is the bad day. And assuming we don't have any major fire outbreaks or major shifts in wind direction, it looks like, tomorrow should be clearer than today and Sunday should be clearer still. Back into the fair quality on Sunday. The Bonner County Zoning Commission met last night to discuss zone changes in Ellisport Bay. The results unknown as of press time. I mean, somebody knows, but I don't. It's not in either of our local papers yet, but they are talking about changing right at the end of Ellisport Bay. There's a piece of property that they are talking about changing from zoned, it's currently zoned residential, and they'd be changing it to zoned recreational.
It's currently zoned rural 5.
Rural 5. Thank you.
To recreation. Yeah. That's the request.
And that would allow for construction of something like, for example, a resort, if they...
Right. Marina, they resort, you know, yeah. more homes, et cetera. Right.
Let's see. In other kind of air quality news, the Upper Smith Fire is still raging in Boundary County, but the Turner Fire is nearing full containment. It was 79% contained yesterday, and hopefully even more today. Here in the city of Sandpoint, Avril Hospitality has dramatically revised its plan for City Beach, the City Beach Resort Hotel. They have changed their plans from a dramatic new construction project to a renovation of the existing structure. And Zach has the piece in the Reader this week about that. And then, of course, if we have time, we must talk about parking, because it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be news in Sandpoint if we didn't talk a little bit about parking.
I feel like they're like maybe two steps away from passing an ordinance that says that we have to talk about parking. It's going to be like a city, yeah. part of the city code that we must talk about parking.
Yeah, but then I think the state's going to come in and say you can't talk about parking.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, there is no. I guess some news since last week about parking, but yeah, we'll get to that as time allows. I wanted to talk a little bit about this the Avril Hospitality thing, because that's a big change.
Yeah, and that was a late-breaking kind of piece of information we got on Wednesday. So I was happy to be able to get that in to this week's paper.
Mm-hmm.
So the documents are all on the city's website. They have a really handy page at sandpointidaho.gov under current projects, where you can look at all the site plans and the narrative and, you know, everything else related to this new conditional use permit that they're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Jack, you know, essentially the new plan, which was kind of hinted at already earlier in the summer when they were coming to get an extension of their previous conditional use permit. So to go back a little bit, they came before planning and zoning, the Sandpoint Planning and Zoning Commission, in June, because their conditional use permit for the prior plan was about to expire. Their demolition permit, you know, to tear down the existing Edgewater, had already expired.
Mm-hmm.
Their building permit was about to expire at the end of June. So they were reaching a point where it was like none of the instruments, the legal instruments that they were in place to allow them to proceed with that much, much bigger project that we've all been talking about for years now, which would have been, you know, like 100 plus rooms, condos, like big condos, a complete reconstruction of the building, two restaurants, you know, like a bar, tiki bar kind of thing. They had like equipment rentals for using on the lake. You know, a bunch of controversy had swirled about, you know, sort of their use of the marina area at the Windbag. Then there was the whole RV park kerfuffle that happened sort of at the end of 2025, where they were trying to somehow get control over that. So all of that has essentially gone away based on these filings. Like, so they've hit the reset button, as far as I can tell. And I couldn't get any comment from them directly by press time. I am hoping to do a follow-up next week when I have made contact with them, you know, since publication. But just based on what they've filed publicly with the city, this is a total redo of the entire project. And it is, by the filing's own admission, you know, much more sort of modest. And like you mentioned, you know, it's a renovation of the existing building rather than a teardown, although there is a partial demolition. So if people are familiar with, you know, sort of the layout of that building, all the guest rooms will remain.
Okay.
The part of the building that houses the current lobby area, the restaurant and bar area, the deck, the kitchen, what used to be Trinity, you know, that people who've lived here for a while will remember.
Trinity at City Beach.
From back when that whole thing was open. That's all going to go away. And the new construction is going to be on that particular part of the property, and it's going to include like a five-story condo tower, and that'll be like 27 units, sort of rising up on that southern part of the property that abuts Bridge Street.
Yeah.
So overlooking kind of the RV park to the south. They're going to have a restaurant. They're going to rebuild, you know, a restaurant and a kitchen, and there's going to be a lobby bar and a tiki bar, which personally I'm kind of excited about. It'll be on sort of facing the closest portion mm-hmm. of the building to the beach. So as people walk into the beach from Bridge Street on that sidewalk, there'll be a tiki bar and a patio right there. And then you'll have sort of the sidewalk and then the grass and the sand that goes into that portion of the water that's going to be immediately in front of the resort. They're going to have an outdoor pool and hot tub kind of between the beach area and the hotel. Some features, you know, landscape features, potentially equipment rentals, and then sort of a terraced outdoor event space on the northern part of the property, closer to like the Dock Street area mm-hmm. where the access to the marina is. They're going to retain, I think, the existing parking is what it sounds like from the filing. So that was another kind of point of contention as this previous project was developing, was how they were going to accommodate all the parking. In this vision of the plan, which has not been approved, I mean, this is just a filing.
Yeah.
But in this vision, that parking will remain essentially the same as it is right now, because this is a much more scaled down version of what they were looking at doing. I mean, 52 guest rooms and 27 condos.
Right. As opposed to
it started out
three figures.
Well, yeah. It started out at like 181 rooms, and mm-hmm. then they reduced it, and then they added condos. So, the previous plan had gone through a lot of iterations. And the reason, you know, for why they've come back with this scaled-down version has been pretty open, in their presentations, was that they were having a really hard time with financing. Because that previous plan, they had put a price tag on it anywhere from $70 million to $100 million at one point. I think it was like sort of bandied about in various meetings that this could go upwards of $100 million.
Yeah.
But $70 million was kind of the number that I kept hearing. And so getting investors on board with it, they cited, spiraling kind of construction market costs. Those two things combined made it really difficult to get everything, all the ducks in a row, all the puzzle pieces, as they put it at their last presentation at P&Z, try to get all those pieces together. So yeah, this, I guess I would assume is a much more manageable project with a lot easier timeline to meet. And, you know, it doesn't really have a lot of the elements to it that caused any of the sort of controversies that have surrounded the prior project.
Yeah.
You mentioned timeline. Is there a timeline?
That was one of the questions I had for him, but I didn't hear back.
Okay.
So I'm hoping, you know, as this progresses, cause you know, I have to stress that this has not been approved. It hasn't.
Yeah.
Like nobody's said, go ahead and do this. Like this is just what they have filed first with the city as kind of the first vision of what they want to do. And it does restart the entire development process. So there'll be hearings. There'll be all the fun things that we do in municipal government to progress a development will happen now, but with this idea in mind.
Yeah.
Now this is a lot more humble messaging than kind of, right. Previously, right?
Right.
From the group.
Right. And, you know, I didn't really get into any of that in this particular story. I just wanted to get sort of the idea out there and to let people know that there is a new plan. But yeah, I mean, Avril Hospitality, based in Whitefish, Montana, they were very ambitious when they came in with their previous proposal. And they came in kind of hot on a couple of levels. And it really did rile people up. And, you know, we all know Sandpoint. Sandpoint likes to get involved. Like the community is very engaged with stuff, and you know, getting kind of riled up is sort of the town sport. So there were a lot of people who were very heated about sort of what they considered to be an overbuilt, overambitious, overreaching sort of mentality to the previous project. This one fits a lot closer to the existing footprint and is intended, I think, to blend a lot more seamlessly into what we already sort of conceive of as the beach vibe. Mm-hmm. And that's done by design. I mean, they say as much in their filings that that's the whole idea, is that this is going to continue a pre-existing use and in a pre-existing sort of way. It will be a bigger development. I mean, with 25-story condo facility is new, And that will look different to people when they go down to the beach, but it's not going to be anything like what they had previously said they wanted to do.
Yeah. Five stories, that's probably the max allowed in within city limits, right? I didn't even know you could go five. I thought the limit was four, but I guess it depends on how tall the story is.
Right.
I think the maximum allowable height is something in the about 60 feet, something like
60 that. To 65, something like that. I've written about it so many times, I forget exactly what the number is, but
yeah,
it is in that range.
And this will go all the way up to that, I assume. I mean, five stories, you pretty much have to.
Well, as we know from any sort of high dollar development in town, they're going to get every inch they can,
right?
To the limit. So,
yeah. But yes, I guess the bottom line is much more modest than the that original plan, which was a bit controversial.
Right, and I'm going to be very curious to see as this goes through a renewed process.
Yeah,
what the reaction is going to be.
Me too.
If people are just going to say like, well, this should have been the project all along. Mm-hmm. Or if people are still going to be, you know, kind of riled up and upset, or what? I mean, it remains to be seen. And I'm excited to talk to anybody from Averill about it, and I'm hoping to get a phone call or an email with them in the next week, so I can have a little bit more detail that goes beyond just the basics of the filing.
Yeah. So they filed it with the city. You can now view that. You can view that filing on the city's website. And the next step will be planning and zoning hearing, I guess. What happens next? This is just the first.
Well, there's probably, I mean, mm-hmm. city commissions get involved in this stuff.
Yeah.
Depending on whether it interfaces with whatever the commission deals with. So there's going to be some tree removal according to the initial plan. Mm-hmm. All the trees in front of the existing Edgewater are going to be removed based on the maps the site plan that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
So conceivably that could touch on like the Urban Forestry Commission. There's obviously going to be some input maybe from the Pedestrian Bicycle Commission because connectivity has been a critical issue with the beach generally.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we may well see commissions get involved first and then commissions make their recommendations. Those recommendations go to the planning and zoning. Planning and zoning does their thing. They make recommendations, goes to the council, and then it's back and forth. And then there's, of course, staff that get involved administratively that we don't see.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a process. But I think generally, I would guess that because it is so much more scaled down, then we might see action on it a lot quicker than we would have with the previous plan.
Well, okay. So there you go. Changes coming to City Beach. Maybe. And on some kind of a time scale, but we don't know what yet.
I'll pick up the reader next week.
Okay.
Now, as a historian of Sandpoint and Bonner County, you know that some projects take a lot longer than others.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let's say that we're getting into the markets, if you will. I mean, as a betting man, what would you say is the outcome that we have something there in 3 years or 5 years?
Gambling is a vice that has never taken for me. I am not.
Okay. All right.
I'm terrible at betting. I never win anything. I think I won $60 in a scratch lottery ticket one time, and that was about it.
That's nice.
But 3 years, I mean, the CUP has a time limit on it. Like all conditional use permits have a limit, which is why Averill has come to the city twice to get extensions. So 3 years is probably a reasonable time to expect to see something happen there. And I think that it is, and again, this is just me talking out of school on the air, mm-hmm. speculating, but I think that there is probably a strong interest at the city hall level to see this get done because it has been talked about for so long. I mean, when I moved back to town from Boise in 2019 or from Pullman, sorry, in 2019, this had already been like doing something at that site had already been talked about for several years prior to when I came back. And that was like 7 years ago. So the city doesn't have any interest in seeing properties go undeveloped like this, especially in such a high visibility, high value location. So I would guess, and again, this is just me guessing, that there will be some impetus from the city side of it. Like, okay, let's get this done. Like, let's get something moving so that we can stop talking about it. We can stop, you know, having all these meetings. Like, just get the project going. And that was a little bit of the tenor that I gathered from the June meeting of P&Z, when they approved that extension of the previous conditional use permit, was that every P&Z commissioner that spoke was sort of like, I just want to see this happen.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause nobody likes to see a derelict, shuttered building. You know, I mean, we see it in our downtown core, you know, with the holes. Mm-hmm. So there is an appetite, I think, to get some of this stuff done and to get the ball rolling on a lot of these redevelopment projects. So I don't know. I mean, again, it's just me guessing, but I would say that there's probably going to be a lot of willingness on the city's side to help kind of grease this so that it moves a little faster.
It is very odd to see that closed. Last year, I believe the restaurant was that they reopened just the Trinity at City Beach during the summer. This year, there's not even that. It's just a closed building, right? Just right. Adjacent to City Beach. It's kind of strange.
And the fact that whole building was shut down was one of the main reasons why they approved the continuation of the CUP in June, was that Averill had to demonstrate that they had diligently pursued the project. And so, I mean, if you have a conditional use permit and you're not doing anything with your project, they don't want to renew it. But if you can prove that you're doing something like substantive to move the thing forward, then they'll give you another year.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason that they said, yeah, go ahead, we'll give you till July 2027 on this previous CUP was because they had closed it down and they were foregoing the revenue that could have been generated, you know, from operating a restaurant or whatever there.
Yeah.
So that was considered to be a substantial enough sacrifice that they were making to indicate that they were serious about going forward. But, you know, now that's all kind of moot. Like basically everything that we've talked about going back several years is now moot.
Yeah.
Based on what this project looks like, it's going to end up being, hopefully, for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, who knows? Maybe, I mean, it's not going to happen this summer, but city could move over the course of the winter and maybe next summer. Something might.
I mean, knocking down a portion of the building is a lot easier than taking down the whole thing.
True. Yeah. Okay. Well, what do we got here? We got a few minutes to talk about parking. If you want to, is everybody excited to talk about what's going on in downtown parking?
I think that the main thing here is that they're going to talk about it again on August 5th.
That's kind of the long and short of it is. They there was a meeting on last Wednesday. There was a really long, drawn out meeting that ended with a 5-1 vote to direct staff to return in August with a proposed updated parking ordinance that only requires payment by permit or hourly in the city owned lots, and then no paid parking downtown whatsoever.
Well, reverting to the way that we've managed the 2-hour zone leading up to the July 1st rollout of the kiosks that we have downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just going back to the status quo.
Yeah.
Before the paid parking program. So, I mean, you can still park 2 hours downtown in the 2-hour zone, but if you overstay, you know, you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
And they are enforcing that now. They weren't enforcing the kiosks because it was part of the educational period, kind of the soft launch phase of all that. But with the sort of suspension of a lot of this stuff while they update the ordinance, that the kiosk portion of the 2-hour parking, the on-street portion, has now been kind of put on pause. The city lots are still operating under the new program. So
yeah,
permits are still, you know, used at City Beach, at the city parking lot, at the waterfront lots, the, you know, Ponderay Bay Trail, is still hourly if you don't have a permit. So those are still working.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the 2-hour zone that has now been sort of like shut off.
I guess the question is, are they going to just pull out the kiosks and eat the cost, or are they going to?
That's
going to
depend on what they decide on August 5th about how they want to update this ordinance.
Yeah.
You know, Councilor Kyle Schreiber has been probably the most vocal critic of the overall paid parking program. And he was pretty clear on that July 15th meeting that they had, the long one that you were referring to, about, you know, not doing the 2-hour kiosks at all. And again, I mean, I'm just guessing here. It seems to me like, logically, if that's the way they end up going, then yeah, I mean, we will take those kiosks out of the 2-hour zone and we own them. I mean, we bought them outright. Right.
Yeah, they weren't rented or anything.
So in that case, again, logically, and again, I'm not speaking, you know, based on any sort of comment that I've heard in a public way from anybody at the city, but just as a logical person, you would assume that if we own these things, we're going to store them somewhere. And then they could be used as replacements, you know, if something gets damaged, like a, you know, somewhere at the city beach or the city parking lot. We'll have some units in reserve that could then be reinstalled if, like, somebody hits it with their car. You know, or they could be sold to somebody else. I mean, there's a lot of options, I think. And I think we're going to probably end up talking about all those details at that August 5th meeting.
Yeah.
But again, it really depends on what they decide to do. The ordinance could come back saying, like, we're only going to do city parking lot and, you know, city owned lots and forget about the 2 hours. Or they could come back and say, we think the 2 hour kiosks could work with some tweaks. I mean, they could go that route too. So it's hard to tell. I mean, nobody wants to, you know, preempt themselves and definitely not, they don't want to commit anything to the record until they've talked about it in the meeting. But
now obviously the decision lies with the council, but what are you hearing from businesses and community members?
Well, I mean, some businesses are saying that the 2 hour kiosks have basically decimated their business. We heard a lot of testimony at that July 15th meeting from some business owners who were citing things like, you know, our sales were 70% down. You know,
there were some shocking statistics, or at least, you know, and I don't know how scientific the studies were.
Well, it's impossible to really, with all assurance, say like it's because of this one thing. I mean, there could be a lot of factors at play, but the fact of the matter is that there were people who showed up, business owners like downtown merchants who showed up at that meeting and said that the 2 hour parking zone had really like wrecked them and had a critical part of the year. I mean, July, like the summer months are, you know, do or die for a lot of businesses downtown. And they rely on that revenue they make during the summer for the tourist trade to survive through fall and winter and even spring, depending on what the ski season's like. I mean, and we haven't had great ski seasons, so winter really hasn't been quite as robust as we would have liked it over the past couple of years. So there is that mentality, but I've also talked to other business owners who say that it hasn't impacted them at all and that they don't care and that they like it. They think it's a good thing because they agree with the city that getting cars to move in, vehicles to move in and out
with of that flow.
Yeah, the churn is good because it increases the ability for customers to use their businesses. So it's a mixed bag. I think that, you know, the folks who come out and say that it's destroyed my business, you know, they're a lot louder, I think, at least from what I've seen. Like, I don't see a lot of testimony at these meetings of people getting up, business owners saying, like, this is great. But in private conversation, walking around, because I'm a downtown business owner, too. I mean, my office is on Cedar, and I'm down here all the time. And I know folks who own businesses down here, and so I just have casual conversations on the sidewalk. They're not going to get up in front of a meeting and say, like, this is great. But they'll say it on the street. It's just, I mean, that's just sort of the function of any kind of public meeting is people don't tend to testify when things are going great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah. Good observation there. Yeah. We're right downtown. We're speaking from studios right downtown during that period where the parking meters were in effect. It's not like downtown was empty. I never noticed, you know, a great deal of empty slots or anything like that. Like, people were still coming downtown.
Well, that's one of the hardest parts about this whole thing is that, I think Council President Deb Rule returns to this theme repeatedly on this topic and many others, is that, you know, she regards herself as a very data-driven public servant.
Yeah.
Like, she wants to see the numbers. And so much of this parking issue has been anecdotal. And it's because we put it in place on July 1st, and it hasn't even been a month. And so we don't have the time. We haven't had the time for the project or the program to be in effect to really gather, like, solid data on it. So, I mean, it really does come down to these anecdotes. And it's hard to legislate anecdotally. I think that's kind of the hard place that the city finds itself in, is that, you know, people can say what they want to say, and they have every right to do that in a meeting, but I mean, who's gonna go run audits of everybody's downtown business. Right. I mean, other than the individual business owner, and you know, if that's how they feel, then that's how they feel.
But it's also interesting because people that visit, they don't know any different,
right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you see the Facebook chatter too, which again also is mostly anecdotal, and a lot of the uproar has been Facebook oriented over this whole parking thing. I mean, most anybody who follows any of the local forums on Facebook.
What is Facebook? Oh, never mind.
God, I wish we could say what is Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, so much of the controversy has been really played out in that social media sphere with people, you know, and you can say whatever you want in a social media platform and nobody's going to fact check you. Nobody's going to, you just kind of fuel whatever sort of churn of outrage is going to feel good at that moment. And in that context, I have seen people who claim to be tourists and visitors to the area who say they'll never come back if they have to pay. But again, it's all anecdotal. I mean, there's no hard data to point to say like this has actually had an effect, because we haven't had it for long enough to know. All we know is what we see and what we say.
It was in effect for 2 weeks. I mean, that's how long.
Well, they weren't even enforcing.
That's right. Yeah. Unenforced. Yeah. I'm not sure. I wonder if they raised how much revenue they raised during that period of time.
Well, the city parking lots, they did have some numbers for that.
And those were the revenue from the sales of the permits.
Just the hourly parking at like City Beach.
Yeah,
specifically. I mean, I want to say that it was quoted in a meeting at some point. There's been so many, they all kind of blur together, but
yeah.
At one point I heard a number, something like, in the first 5 days of paid parking at City Beach, we made $11,000.
Wow. Well,
so,
okay.
I mean, that's one data point that we do have,
right,
is that almost immediately charging folks to park at City Beach was making a revenue gain.
Right. Significant. Yeah. Okay. Well, Zach, you are you're quoted here in the third paragraph, or the third sentence, really, of the New York Times. How often are you cited by the Times, Zach? This is pretty regular, isn't it?
I have to say that's a first.
Okay. Well, you can find Zach's a little more. It's commentary in a long piece in the New York Times.
And fun fact, John Reuter.
Uh-huh.
Who was one of the original co-founders of the Sandpoint Reader and my longtime former business partner.
Mm-hmm.
He was quoted in the article as well. He used to be the city council president of Sandpoint. He was, I believe, the youngest city council member ever elected in the history of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the non-discrimination ordinance, which was amended sort of out of existence last fall.
Yep.
So the New York Times wrote a piece about like what that means and how our decision here in Sandpoint has kind of percolated upward into the state level legislation and now is sort of being talked about nationally.
Yeah.
But Reuter was in there too. So we had two former, one current, one former Sandpoint Reader editor, publisher. Although John is still one of the editor emeritus of the Sandpoint Reader. So he's still on the masthead too.
Let's see.
And that was not John's first time. That's his second time, as far as I'm aware, being quoted in the New York Times.
In the Times. Yeah.
Now it's always interesting to read about your hometown, especially from a national publication. I mean, what did you think from your perspective, how the reporter did in telling that story?
I appreciated that it brought a lot more nuance to the story than a lot of New York Times profiles of Sandpoint tend to be. We were talking before we came on the air that it seems like, you know, every year or so, the New York Times finds some reason to write about us.
Mm-hmm.
And in my...
Well, we know why they want to come to Sandpoint and stay a little.
Yeah, I mean, from my observation, there are two kinds of New York Times stories about Sandpoint. One is like everybody in the world should move here. And the other one is like, oh my gosh, look at what these people are doing. some weird political thing.
Yeah.
And usually when it's one of the political stories, we get the Aryan Nations, we get the Randy Weaver, we get the, you know, all this stuff from like the 90s. And the whole region gets painted in that sort of broad way. And I feel like this piece did a better job than most, or maybe any that I've read in recent years, of pointing out that like Sandpoint was not the Aryan Nation's hotbed. Sandpoint was not where the Ruby Ridge standoff happened. So that, I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. And it, it did bring in some voices, you know, that you don't often see, sort of amplified. And I think it took a more sensitive approach to talking about a very sensitive issue, which is, you know, trans people's access to public accommodations and how we legislate as a city, as a state, and by implication as a country to provide, you know, protections and accommodations for people who are, you know, more vulnerable in many cases. And whether we do it or not, like, why are the, you know, what and how are the reasons why we have those protections? And yeah, it was just, I mean, it was a more complex portrait of the town than I have seen in a lot of other cases. And I think it, you know, part of that had to do with the fact that the reporter, Anna Griffin, is based in the Northwest. And when I had an interview with her, it was, you know, an hour and some change. She really seemed to be a lot more curious about, like, how we operate. I mean, the first question she asked me, which is kind of a unique question from a national reporter, is like, how does this town run? How does this town operate? Like, tell me how it works. Huh. And I thought that was a good way to begin an interview like that. And I think it came through in the piece.
Well, Find Zach, newsstands weekly in the Sandpoint Reader, available Thursdays, and then find him in the New York Times every once in a while on the July 21st edition of the Times. Will, anything else? Any other news stories? Anything else we need to talk about before we turn it over here?
You know, next week starts a big music week for Sandpoint, so. Mm-hmm. We've got some things happening there, but yeah, mm-hmm. It was nice to be back in the studio with you.
And likewise, you will not see me next week. I'll be out for the next two Fridays.
He's going to be in a horse.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yes, I'm taking my own odyssey for a couple weeks here. Hopefully not for, how long was he gone?
20 years. 20 years.
Yeah. 20 years if you count the Iliad and then, 10 years with after the war.
I went and saw that movie, too, on Friday.
Well, we're going to...
I didn't see you there, but...
Yeah, I went to the late show. I was there at 8:20.
I did an earlier one with my... I brought my 14-year-old son, and he loved it.
Did he?
I thought it was great, too. I'm going to have a whole page review of it in next week's paper, so...
Yes, I enjoyed it as well. Jim Healy... A little more mixed on the Odyssey.
I had quibbles, of course.
Well, we're going to have to turn off the microphones and we'll continue this conversation. Yes, time for Otto's Eclectic Mix. I'm gone for the next couple Fridays. Will, you're back next week at least. Chris Bessler will be here. Zach, maybe we'll hear from you again in the next couple weeks too as these stories develop. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week and stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix. All day long here on 88.5 KRFY.